What's up, Rams Nation, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Wire Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Cameron Da Silva. You can follow me on Twitter at Cam Da Silva and follow the Rams Wire on Twitter at the Rams Wire. Today, we'll be talking a little bit about some of the decisions that the Rams have to make this offseason with regards to the franchise tag, some cap casualties, some guys that they could look at from the outside as potential free agent additions, and we'll take a look at some of the prospects that they could look at in the draft. Mel Kiper released his second mock draft this week, and we'll take a look at who he has the Rams taking in that spot at number 23, and some of the guys that he has them passing on. So we'll roll right into things and talk about the franchise tag, because on Tuesday, the window did open up for teams to use the tag. It's their first opportunity to place it on a player. And that window runs from Tuesday until March 6th at 4 p.m. That's the deadline for teams to use their one and only franchise tag on a player. It's a two-week window. So a lot of teams like the Rams are going to have decisions to make. It came out on Tuesday night that the Dolphins are most likely going to use theirs on Jarvis Landry and pay him $16 million, which I don't really think is a good deal, but they don't really have many options when it comes to keeping him around because he is absolutely their best receiver. But with regards to the Rams have a couple decisions to make in that regard. Sammy Watkins and LaMarcus Joyner are the two most likely candidates. They've used the tag the past 2 years, of course, both on Trumaine Johnson both times. So he was the highest paid cornerback the past 2 years in the NFL because of the franchise tag, and most likely the Rams are going to make Sammy Watkins maybe the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL by tagging him along with Jarvis Landry and maybe Allen Robinson from the Jaguars. Their decision is basically going to come down to whether they want to keep him for 1 year and protect themselves from another team like the 49ers or the Bears or the Browns from coming in and offering him $14 million, $13 million a year for 4 years in a deal that he'd have a hard time turning down. The Rams don't really have that sort of financial flexibility right now because they do have to sign Aaron Donald, they have to sign Joyner and maybe Johnson and Roby Coleman and Sullivan, and the list goes on and on. So they have a bunch of their own free agents to sign. They have to sign their draft class. They're going to inevitably make a few additions in free agency from other teams. So although they do have $40 million in cap space right now, they are a bit cap strapped when you figure that they're going to have to extend Aaron Donald and probably pay him $20 million a year at some point this offseason or next year. So that cuts the cap space in half, essentially. They can make cuts like Robert Quinn, Mark Barron, and Tavon Austin and free up $24 million or so if they want to, which would give them an additional 50% of cap space and bring it up to, say, $64 million or so. Should they want to go that route, I think that would be smart. But going back to Watkins, I said this week that their blueprint is already out there for re-signing him, and it comes in the way of the Eagles, who just won their first Super Bowl. The last offseason, they signed Alshon Jeffrey to a one-year deal. I think it was worth $14 million. He played 11 games on that contract, and after 11 games, the Eagles thought they saw enough from him to warrant an extension. So they signed him to a four-year, $52 million deal, which is less than the franchise tag would have paid him on a yearly basis, that is. And now they have him for 4 more years. So that's ideally the route that the Rams would go with Watkins, just because this past season he wasn't the elite receiver that they thought he'd be for them. You really thought he would come in and have a 1,000-yard season. I know it's tough to do after only really having half of a training camp to work in a new offense and a new quarterback and such. But the fact that he only had 39 catches, 593 yards, and 8 touchdowns, the touchdowns were impressive, but the yardage totals were really disappointing. And and Goff only looked his way 70 times. He only targeted Watkins 70 times in 15 games, which was a career low for him, for Sammy. So it's a tough situation because he is a guy that you just gave up a second round pick, EJ Gaines, to acquire. And now you can't really just let him walk after one season, one really disappointing season, to be honest. That's why the franchise tag is going to be a fallback option. I think the Rams are going to try to talk to Watkins' agent this week and in the next 2 weeks and try to work out, say, a one-year deal for $12 million, $11 million to keep him around for one more season. Sammy seemed happy this year in Los Angeles. He didn't make a big deal of the lack of targets or anything like that. So it seems like he would be open to staying, which is a good sign for the Rams, of course. But I think the Rams are going to kind of try to use this two-week window to negotiate something before having to use the franchise tag, because once he signs that tag, he's locked in for $16 million or so for next year. And he's not going to take a one-year deal for $11-12 million. That would not be wise on his part, of course. And so once he gets tagged, it's either going to be him playing on the franchise tag or the Rams signing him to a long-term deal. Neither of which are better than signing him to a cheaper one-year extension to see what he can do in the next season. Another thing with the tag is once a player is tagged, and the deadline passes on July 16th, you can't negotiate a long-term extension with that player. So in the case of Sammy Watkins, if he signs the tag and it comes to July 16th and they don't have a deal, he's going to play on the tag for all of 2018, and you're not going to have the flexibility and the freedom to negotiate a contract the way that the Eagles did with Jeffrey. So that's kind of where they're at with Watkins. He's the most likely candidate to receive the tag, but then there's LaMarcus Joyner. He's a stud safety. He moved from nickel corner to safety this past season under Wade Phillips. Had a great year. I think he was the third best safety in the league or so by Pro Football Focus's measure. He was all over the field, even though he missed a few games. He was arguably the Rams' second best defender behind Aaron Donald. So he's a guy that they can't really afford to let go, even as good as John Johnson was as a rookie. You really want to keep those two together for the long haul and really see what they can do together for the foreseeable future. Because having a safety tandem like that, you look at the Seahawks with Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and what they were able to do there in Seattle. And the Rams would like to kind of replicate that, albeit with very different type of players. But they'd like to have that duo that can stick around for several years and play at a high level. With regards to Joyner, the tag would be about $11 million. So it's obviously cheaper than Watkins. But it would also be more expensive, most likely, than signing him to a long-term deal. I would think that if the Rams do go the extension route, he would get $9 to $10 million, maybe push 11 per year, which would lock him up for, say, 4 or 5 years. He's just entering his prime. Obviously, he only has 1 year of safety experience under his belt in the NFL after playing nickel corner. But he's a guy who you don't want to let walk because he did prove this past season that he is a star safety in this league, even though he is 5'8 and very small for that position. The fact of the matter is that he's someone who has already proved he can be a top talent, and Watkins hasn't. Obviously, the potential is there with Watkins, and we saw that in Buffalo a little bit, but he also has had trouble staying healthy, and it's really a situation where he struggled this past season, and you don't really know what you're going to get from him moving forward. That's really where the franchise tag is beneficial for a team, because it is something that the team can use it as kind of a stepping stone between a rookie contract and a long-term extension. And it affords them it takes the risk out of signing someone to a long-term deal. If you go out and sign Watkins right now to a 4-year deal, $52 million, say they match Alshon Jeffrey's contract, and he busts after 2 years, you're really in a hole financially. Whereas if you just franchise tag him, it's only 1 year, it's $16 million, and after that, you move on from him. There's no other repercussions in the future or anything like that. So it really takes a risk out of signing a player, and it allows you to keep him around for one more year without the chance that some other team is going to come in and sign him. So that's kind of where the Rams are at right now with the franchise tag. They can use the exclusive, the non-exclusive, or the transition tag. I would expect they would use the exclusive on either guy if they do go that route, just because it precludes them from negotiating with other teams. Sure, it'd be nice if they use the non-exclusive on Sammy and he negotiated another contract with another team that the Rams weren't willing to match, and they get 2 first-round picks. So maybe they go that route with him, but I would assume that they'd prefer to keep him over getting 2 first-round picks. Not that anyone would really make him a huge offer, I don't think, right now, that the Rams wouldn't be willing to match. Moving on from those two guys who could be franchise tagged, we'll take a look at some outside free agents that the Rams could look at this offseason. There's 5 guys that I really looked at a little bit this week and liked a lot for their fits in Los Angeles. The first guy is TJ Carey. He's a cornerback from the Raiders. He was absolutely their best corner this past season and probably their best defensive back out of their 5 starters, you could say. He has experience in the slot. He can play outside. He has good size. I think he's 5'11". He's not a huge ball hawk. He's not a guy who's going to pick off 7 passes a year like Jermaine Johnson did, but he's a solid defender and he's a willing tackler and all those things. But with no interceptions this past year and only 3 in his career, there are questions about his ball skills. That being said, I think he'd be a really solid addition to the Rams if Roby Coleman does leave or if Johnson leaves, because he can play either spot. And with Kayvon Webster still recovering from an Achilles injury, you don't know when he's going to be back or how effective he's going to be when he does return. So that's one guy that I think the Rams could look at and kind of bring in as an affordable, cheaper cornerback option to take over for either Johnson, Roby Coleman, or Webster in the beginning of the year. The second guy is Aaron Lynch. He's a guy the Rams are familiar with after playing the 49ers so many times in the past 4 years. He's a good pass rusher. He's dealt with some injuries the past couple of years and hasn't really put up the numbers that you'd expect after he got off to a good start in his career. He was only a 5th-round pick a few years ago in 2014, but in his first 2 seasons, he had 12.5 sacks combined in 30 games. So those are really solid numbers for a player taken in the 5th round. And he's, even though he's only played 14 games the past 2 years and only has 2.5 sacks, he's a guy with good potential, and his size is something that the Rams are really going to, I think, they would really like and see as a good fit in their defense at 3-4 outside linebacker. He's 6'6", 270, and he's only 24 years old. He's going to be 25 next month, but even that, he's still extremely young and really raw in that regard. So he's someone I think if Robert Quinn gets cut, if Connor Barwin walks in free agency, he's someone I could see coming in and really possibly being a starter for them. The third guy is John Bostic from the Colts. He's bounced around a little bit from the Bears, Patriots, Colts, but this past season he was finally able to stay a little bit healthier for the Colts. He had 97 tackles in 14 games. He knocked down 3 passes, had a sack. So he played well in their scheme, and it's a similar defense to the Rams because they do run a 3-4. And he's a guy who's a little bit bigger than Mark Barron, Barron is someone that they could move on from this offseason and cut and really save $9 million. So I think they'll be looking for a new inside linebacker this year, obviously not to replace Alec Ogletree after they just signed him to an extension, but Barron is someone who's expensive and he doesn't exactly fit what the Rams like to do at inside linebacker because he's not that stud run stopper who's going to take on blocks and get off blocks and make tackles in the hole every single time, like you would expect your inside linebacker to do. He's good in coverage. He had three interceptions, Barron, that is, this past season, but that's not the priority that you want on a team that ranked 28th against the run this past season. I think Bostic could come in and be a cheaper option. He's obviously not going to make $10 million or count $10 million against the cap next year. So the Rams would save a lot of money in that regard and really get a guy who could, as long as he stays healthy, who could put together a nice season. Justin Ellis, going back to the Raiders, he was their nose tackle this past season. And although he doesn't offer much as a pass rusher, he is exactly what the Rams need out of a nose tackle. He's 335 pounds. He can eat up blocks. He can take up space in the middle, which is something the Rams struggled to do this past season at nose tackle. It didn't work out with Tyron Walker, and Tanzel Smart really struggled as a rookie. So they're going to be looking for that starter at nose tackle in between Michael Brockers and Aaron Donald. It's hard to find guys like that because you do want someone that can offer a little bit as a pass rusher and who can stay on the field on third down, but it's something that the Rams are really going to have to look at this offseason and try to find someone who can eat up blocks and really stuff running backs in the hole. The last guy on the list is Dante Moncrief. Obviously, you know, he's from the Colts. He's someone who I don't see the Rams bringing in unless they do lose Sammy Watkins. But he's going to be a lot cheaper than Sammy obviously would be. He has a ton of potential, and I think he ran a 4.4 at his at the combine in the 40-yard dash. And a few years ago, in 2016 and 15, he had 7 touchdowns and 6 touchdowns. 2016 was looking like it would be his best season. In 9 games, he had 307 yards and 7 touchdowns already. So you project that out, and it's something like almost 600 yards and 14 touchdowns or so. But he's someone who has a good amount of potential. He's only 24 years old. He'll be 25 before the season begins. But he's a guy who can open up the offense the way that Watkins did and take defenders deep and open up things underneath for Jared Goff and guys like Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. But again, I don't see them going after a wide receiver in free agency unless they do lose Watkins, which at this point, who knows? I don't really see them passing on him. I think he'll be back, whether it's on the franchise tag or a short-term deal, but you really never know in the NFL. Going from free agency to the draft, as I mentioned in the beginning, Mel Kiper did release his second mock draft, of the year. This one, he has the Rams going with, unsurprisingly, a cornerback. That's arguably their biggest position of need, especially with Johnson and Roby Coleman being free agents, and again, Webster recovering from the Achilles injury. So at 23, he has the Rams going with Josh Jackson, who gets compared to Trumaine Johnson a little bit because he has good size, and although he's a little bit thinner in his frame, he does have outstanding ball skills. I think he had 8 interceptions this past year. He's 6'1", 192, so he has good size. He can get up on receivers at the line of scrimmage. It's not in man coverage. He's not at his best, which isn't, I guess, ideal for the Rams. But his ball skills and his instincts are really remarkable and arguably the best of any corner or defensive back in this draft. You see it with his one-handed interception against the Ohio State earlier this year. He had 3 picks in that game, and he locks down number one receivers, and he creates turnovers, which is something that the Rams did a really good job of this past season. So you stick him outside if you lose Johnson. Obviously, it's going to be a little bit of a drop-off because Johnson does travel with number one receivers, and he does a good job in that regard, even though he doesn't get a ton of credit for it. But he is a guy who can come in day one and be a starter. whether he falls to 23 or not is that's really the biggest question right now, and it's going to come down to a lot about what he runs at the combine. If he runs in the 4.4s, low 4.4s, he's most likely going to go before 23. You have a ton of teams that need cornerbacks, whether it's the Bears or the Redskins need a corner after trading Kendall Fuller. So teams like that are going to look at corners, as well the 49ers in the top, earlier in the draft. So that's a guy who a lot of teams are going to look at, and it could preclude the Rams from even getting to look at him at 23. But as far as his skill set goes, as I said, the ball skills and the instincts, they're top notch, and they really jump out on tape when you do watch him. But another thing that stands out is his poor tackling against the run. He's not the most willing tackler, per se. He's not going to get off blocks easily. There are a couple of plays that I saw where he wasn't getting held by defenders, but he couldn't release off the block at all, and really got pushed back by wide receivers. So that's something that you do have to take into account, because Wade Phillips does value a cornerback's tackling ability and his willingness to get into the pile and mix things up against ball carriers. So that's just something to watch for him. As we head into the draft process, you're obviously not going to get a look at that at the combine because they don't tackle or anything like that. But you'll see his coverage skills and his ball skills, tracking the ball in the air and making a play on it. So that's something that they're definitely going to like. Another guy that I like personally for the Rams is Rashawn Evans. He's the linebacker out of Alabama. He's a really good run stopper. He's bigger than Mark Barron by a fair amount, I think. I want to say he's 245 pounds or so. And you see it on tape. He has good speed. He's aggressive. And he's a punishing run tackler. He fills holes. He gets off blocks. In the first two plays against LSU that I watched, he took out the tight end and pushed him back on the edge when he was a blocker, and then on a shovel pass inside, he absolutely blew him up on that little pitch inside. So he's a guy who has great instincts. He has good sideline to sideline speed. His instincts are really good, as I said. So he's someone that I think the Rams are going to give a look when they do go on the clock at 23, especially if they're wiped out from guys like Denzel Ward, Josh Jackson. Mike Hughes is another cornerback that they could look at. But if Rashawn Evans does fall that far, he's someone that they would definitely have to take a look at. You would expect Roquan Smith and Tremaine Edmonds from Virginia to go well earlier, in the beginning of the first round. And it's just a matter of whether teams value a guy like Evans as much as the Rams will. So he's someone that I really like for Los Angeles in the first round. It's a little bit of a difficult situation because linebacker isn't their biggest need right now. So it's going to come down to whether they have edge rushers and corners on the board at 23 that they like more than a linebacker. And of course, if they bring back Barron and he stays on that contract, then maybe they don't address the linebacker situation at all. Who knows? So those are just a few guys that I think they could look at in the draft and a few targets that would be really nice additions to the defense, which of course is the direction that I would think they would go in the first round. Going past the draft and free agency, I'm going to talk a little bit about Jared Goff's season in 2017, which was obviously really good. He was a Pro Bowler. He had the same number of interceptions this past year as he did as a rookie in 7 games. Everything about his season was an improvement. But as far as him developing, there was one area where he did, I don't know if you would say he took a step back, but his ball security was still an issue. He fumbled it 8 times in 2017 in just 15 games. As a rookie, he had 5 fumbles in 7 games, so I guess he did improve on that rate, but you never want to see your quarterback fumbling it 8 times. Even though the Rams did recover 5 of them, that's not something you want to see out of your quarterback. It was a matter of him not taking care of the football, not feeling the rush off his right side, and it's just a matter of being aware of your surroundings and really understanding where the rush is coming from. He does a good job of getting rid of the ball when he does escape the pocket and things like that, but when he does hold the ball a little bit longer in the pocket, he gets good protection. He needs to realize that you either got to make a throw or you got to get out of the pocket. So that's something that I think the Rams are probably going to work on a little bit with him. He had issues taking care of the ball at Cal with regards to fumbles, and that was kind of an issue that a lot of teams were a little bit worried about. So hopefully he'll get that squared away a little bit next year and kind of cut down on those 13 fumbles that he's had the past two seasons. Another thing I would like to see him improve on is his deep ball accuracy to Sammy Watkins. I think only two of his targets, his throws downfield to Watkins, were on target, and one of them was the touchdown. I think it was against the Giants, and the other one was against the 49ers, where it was a deep pass down the sideline. Sammy made an over-the-shoulder catch. Really, really great play on both ends. But other than that, they had a really hard time connecting on deep passes, which is Sammy's forte. That's where he has most of his success, on post routes and on in-breaking routes deep down the field. That's where he's going to have a lot of his success. So Goff, he's a good deep ball guy. He showed that at Cal, and throwing to the middle and right side of the field, he was above average with regards to his passer rating on deep passes. But for some reason, that left side is giving him a little bit of trouble, whether it's connecting with Watkins or he just doesn't feel as comfortable throwing to the left deep down the field. So that's something that I think they're going to work on if Watkins does return this offseason. They're going to have OTAs and minicamp and all that, and a full training camp to work together, where it's going to really help their development and help them hopefully become one of the better duos in the NFL, because the Rams do have something brewing that's really special on offense with Goff and Robert Woods and Watkins and Cooper Kupp. And then you have guys like Tyler Higbee and Gerald Everett at tight end, who can hopefully have a big impact in year two. Everett being a rookie, he didn't play the biggest role. He saw his snaps decrease as the year went on a little bit, but he's a great receiver, good route runner, and he's hopefully going to be something like Jordan Reed was for the Redskins when McVay was there. So that's, Goff has all the weapons at his disposal and he has all the help he can need, but it's just a matter of making those big plays downfield and throwing with good accuracy to Watkins on the left side. Lastly, he wasn't the most aggressive quarterback. That goes with deep passes and tight window throws. He didn't make many of them, which is kind of a, it goes along with Sean McVay's offense and what he likes his quarterback to do. He doesn't like his quarterbacks to take many chances. He wants his receivers to get open, and he wants Goff to make the right read. This past season, Goff often stared down his number one receiver, and when it wasn't there, he panicked a little bit and would escape the pocket and kind of get happy feet in the pocket. With this next season, he's going to get a lot of time to work with Sean McVay and their new kind of coaching staff on offense. But you'd like to see him kind of take a few more chances on tight window throws rather than locking in on one read. And if he's not wide open, moving on to another guy who might be less open. I think Goff had one of the lowest aggression rates according to Next Gen Stats. So he didn't take many chances in that regard with when it comes to making tight window throws and kind of squeezing it in there where his receiver might not be wide open. Obviously, that's nitpicking on a quarterback who just made the Pro Bowl in his second year. But those are just some things that I think that he's going to work on this offseason and work to improve as we head into next year. So that'll do it for this episode of the Rams Wire Podcast. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Cam De Silva and follow everything that we're doing at theramswire.usatoday.com. I'll talk to you guys next week. And until then, go Rams.